It's a good day at Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
That packs so much flavor. You get so much roasted garlic, you get that raw garlic, you get the heat from the chipotles, a lot of richness from the mayonnaise.
Chef Arlen Llewellyn has a basic roasted garlic aioli recipe that she tweaks to match whatever sandwich it's going on at Function Brewing. This recipe plus a vegan burger that doesn't hold back on the spicy. Then from Harvest Public Media, two stories exploring life in rural America. And Denise Rackley trains dogs to help her raise sheep. We hear about their special bond coming up. No news headlines in the show this week, but there are still plenty of stories to read on our website, eartheats.org. We want to jump right into this story from Harvest Public Media. It's a bit of a departure from their food, farm, and field reporting, but it is a topic that's dramatically impacting the areas of the country where Luke Runyon and the other reporters spend most of their time. Prescription painkillers and heroin are fueling a rise in drug overdoses, and research shows some of America's rural areas are particularly at risk for opioid addiction and abuse. Luke explains why.
Melissa Morris got her first prescription when she was 20. She had a C-section, and her doctor sent her home with Percocet. She took one and laid down on her bed.
And I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, is this legal? How can this feel so good, you know?
She was hooked. Soon after, she started taking the pills recreationally, shopping around for doctors who'd write new prescriptions.
It starts out Vicodin, Percocet.
Then it was OxyContin. Then the highly addictive and potent fentanyl.
And then it's heroin. That's the holy grail.
Morris started stealing to fund her addiction, then got into the drug trade herself, dealing meth and other illicit substances, raising money to buy more heroin.
And you can buy a gram of heroin for $50, and it'll last you 5 days longer. So that's why so many people here have turned to heroin.
Morris lives in Sterling, Colorado, a two-hour drive from Denver. About 14,000 people live here. And since 2002, the death rate from opioid overdoses in this county has nearly doubled. Morris says she's known at least 10 people who've overdosed on a mix of drugs in the last few years. And it's not just Sterling. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the number of deaths nationwide in which opioids were involved quadrupled in the last decade and a half.
The number one issue we're facing is opioids.
Jack Westfall is a family physician and researcher at the University of Colorado. He works with a network of rural clinics and hospitals in the state and says doctors on the plains are feeling frantic.
We don't know what to do with this wave of people who are using opioids. They're in the clinic, they're in the ER, they're in the hospital, they're in the morgue because they overdose.
But what's causing the spike? University of California Davis epidemiologist Magdalena Cerda says a mix of risk factors has made rural America more susceptible to addiction. After the 2008 recession, rural areas consistently lagged behind urban areas in the recovery, losing jobs and population.
You have a situation where people might be particularly vulnerable to perhaps using prescription opioids to self-medicate a lot of symptoms of distress related to sources of chronic stress, chronic economic stress.
Cerda also says the specific types of jobs more prevalent in rural areas, like manufacturing, farming, and mining, tend to have higher injury rates, leading to more pain and, in turn, more painkillers. Other research points to the unique social structures in rural America as a potential cause.
One of the things that I think probably is counterintuitive to most of what we think of as a small town is that rural people actually have much larger social networks than urban people.
Kirk Dombrowski is a sociologist at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
And that gives them more opportunities to know where to get drugs. And so some of those social factors of being in a small town can definitely contribute.
Yeah, that's a lot hotter if you do that.
Back at her home in Sterling, Melissa Morris takes a small piece of orange film out of her purse. She stopped using heroin 4 years ago, and now she depends on Suboxone, an opioid used to wean people off heroin and other illegal versions of the drug.
See, this is what the wrapper looks like.
Morris drives to a clinic 2 hours away to pick it up. She says there's a 6-week waiting list for the only doctor in Sterling certified to prescribe Suboxone.
And then you put it under your tongue and you let it dissolve there.
She recently recruited 2 opioid-dependent friends to the clinic she goes to weekly for treatment.
I used to sell them pills and heroin and stuff, and so I do have hope. I do have hope.
While that strong connection among rural residents could be part of what caused the opioid epidemic, it could also be what helps to fix it. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Later on today, what happens when a big company leaves a small town? Harvest with that story from Nebraska. Now to a sheep farm in rural southern Indiana. It's not quite lambing season yet. The new additions to Denise Rackley's farm will probably come right around the same time as fresh green blades of grass start popping up. But if this year is anything like last year, when we spoke to Denise for this story, it promises to be a busy spring. And as she tells me, she couldn't make it work without the help of her furry farmhands. Denise uses a cane to get around her farm. She has a brace on her right knee, but she says it's a pre-sheep injury. It's like she's moving in slow motion, guiding a couple baby lambs to join the herd.
I have to get these 2 little guys. Hey, you're going the wrong way, buddy.
It's early April in Indiana, but it's very cold and windy, and even a little snowy, on her farm down near the Ohio River. It's 100 acres total, the cropland she rents out, the woodland she leaves alone, and the pasture land is for the sheep. She has about 80 ewes right now that are lambing. Most of them have numbers spray-painted on their backs with matching numbers on their lambs so she can keep them all straight. Hello, number 34. Inside the barn now. It's loud. Sheep are loud. But Denise's dogs are quiet. A handful of border collies lay in their cages, looking up at us as we walk by. She opens one of the crates.
This is Meg. She's 5 years old. She was born and raised and trained here. So I'll use Meg to bring the new mom and lamb up to put behind the barn with the others.
Now the other dogs start whining. Denise says they're jealous they weren't chosen for the job. The lamb she needs was born overnight. Meg's task is to separate the lamb and the ewe from the rest of the herd.
Lie down.
Meg is shaking with anticipation. And now it's more quiet than it's been all morning.
Not a girl.
Denise says border collies are naturally quiet when they work, which is good, because barking dogs make sheep nervous. Denise closes the gate. She gives Meg the okay to start her approach, and the sheep scatter.
Come by!
That means go clockwise around the animals. Away is counterclockwise.
Not a girl. Lie down. Easy, girl.
Meg drops to her belly. She's isolated the ewe and its new lamb. Denise gives commands to bring her slowly around, coaxing the animals to go through the gate in a holding pen.
Not a girl. Time.
And now Meg trots off to drink from a trough of water.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool, huh?
Denise grabs the lamb and wraps a band around its tail. That tail will fall off in 2 to 3 weeks. Then it's a dash of purple spray paint. This ewe and her lamb get the number 43. Denise has been working with dogs almost as long as she's been a rancher. She's from Cincinnati, but moved to South Dakota in 1998 to work on a ranch. A neighbor there told her how helpful dogs can be when working with livestock, so she got a puppy and trained it. Or rather, the dog trained Denise. That was Luke. Together, they tended a flock of 50 ewes. Their first real test as working partners came when there was a birth on that ranch.
on the ranch where I lived, they had purebred cattle. They had Hereford cattle. And I was always all right going out, checking cattle, take the four-wheeler, go check on calves being born, record it in the calving book, and get an ear tag ready. And so I was there on the ranch alone that weekend, so I went to check cattle and told him to stay at the barn because a dog, just like the sheep, don't necessarily like a dog with their lambs when they're really young, that mama cows would be upset with a dog coming in to the pasture with young calves. So I had to ask him to stay at the barn, which he did, and I drove down on the four-wheeler, and this mama had a burr up her butt, and I got off the four-wheeler, walked over toward the calf. She hit me with her head, knocked me down, and was grinding me into the dirt with her head and stepping on me. I was on this ranch by myself, far enough away from the neighbors that they weren't going to hear me screaming. And the fence behind me was barbed wire and rather low to the ground, and I didn't think I could get under it or through it. And the four-wheeler was behind her, so that wasn't going to help me. Luke came from the barn, flew between the cow and I, bit her on the nose as he went, and so she turned because he was now a bigger threat than I was, and she went after him, and I got up out of the way. It was not lost on me that it probably saved me at least from an ER visit, if not saved my life. That instilled in me, I suppose, a great respect for just what they're capable of and what they're willing to do for me.
Eight years ago, Denise's father died. Her mother didn't want to sell their farm, and she didn't want to live alone. So Denise said if she could bring Luke with her and start raising sheep on the property, she'd move back home. According to 2012 USDA data, her farm is now one of only 14 sheep operations in Switzerland County, Indiana. Here, by the junction of Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio, Denise feels isolated.
I really liked it out west, just because the lifestyle, the people, it's more agriculturally centered. That changes how people relate to each other. They're very dependent on neighbors, and there's more of a community type setting there. Here, you have to pretty much do it all yourself. So that makes it harder.
It also felt more comfortable for her to be a single woman running her own farm when she lived in South Dakota. She's only one of 38 women listed as a principal operator of a farm in Switzerland County. She says her dogs take the place of several people in farm work and, it seems, in companionship. Denise also breeds border collies. She sells most of them, but keeps a select few to train to work with her sheep. Her youngest is Ziva. She's about a year and a half old. Ziva and Luke shared time on the farm, just briefly.
When dogs get to, 10, 12, 13, they start slowing down. So as they're heading for retirement, basically, you have to have a young one coming up. So you have that bond with another dog while you're kind of letting go of the older one.
Was she born around the same time that he died?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait. Get. Get. Wait. Wait. Shh. Atta girl. Walk up. Atta girl.
We posted a series of photos showing Denise and her dogs on the farm at eartheats.org.
Ziva. Good girl.
For the first show of 2017, it just makes sense to highlight a couple vegan recipes. because how many of us are promising ourselves to eat less meat in the new year? So we're going to give you two recipes with Chef Arlen Llewellyn. Her veggie burger is unbelievable. But first, a condiment that tastes as good as what restaurants serve.
Okay, so this is our standard roasted garlic aioli recipe. We use this in lots of different things. We're going to use chipotles in here to mirror the sort of Southwest flavors in that burger. But when I'm making like a banh mi sandwich, I make the same recipe but with sriracha instead of chipotles. So this is a basic ratio that we use a lot.
Okay, to start it off, she roasted so much garlic. My goodness, an entire cookie sheet full of garlic to use in various preparations at Function Brewing. Her ratio is 4 parts garlic cloves by volume to 1 part oil by volume. So for your kitchen, do 3/4 of a cup of peeled garlic to 3 tablespoons of olive oil. So that was done 30 minutes ahead. Now she has her food processor with 2 cloves of raw garlic.
To that, we're going to add 1/2 cup of roasted garlic cloves. And we want 4 teaspoons of white miso. So that basically is the seasoning for this recipe. We don't add any salt. The miso is bringing all the salt, but then also bringing that complexity that miso is so good at. And we're going to add about 1 tablespoon of chipotles and adobo. So it's about the size of a whole pepper. We're going to do this stuff first because, again, we want to get that miso incorporated before we add mayonnaise to it. So we're just going to let this stuff go first. Okay, so to this we're going to add 1 cup of vegan mayo. And last but not least, we want 1.5 teaspoons of red wine vinegar. Again, you just want that little bit of acidity. Most recipes benefit from a little bit of acid, especially when there's a really rich component in it, like in this case, this mayonnaise. Whew! That packs so much flavor. You get so much roasted garlic, you get that raw garlic, you get the heat from the chipotles, a lot of richness from the mayonnaise.
Arlen scraped the aioli out of the food processor and put it aside. It just gets better with a pinto bean burger coming up. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Wharton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Urgent Foods, a locally owned food truck offering gourmet choices for all lifestyles, tastes, and diets. From vegetarian to paleo and low carb. Taste matters. Your taste. Current truck location is available at whereisurgent.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Back with Chef Llewellyn. The thing with veggie burgers is they take some time to make. Know that up front. Arlen spent a lot of time in front of the oven, first off, roasting the pinto beans, peppers, and onions that are the meat of this recipe. Then into the food processor goes 2 tablespoons of the oil that's left over from the roasted garlic aioli. And then, since this is vegan, her binding ingredient.
We're going to add 1/4 cup of the liquid from the beans. So 1/4 cup is basically equal to 1 egg. So again, if you want to just add an egg instead of this, you certainly can.
I'm surprised at how sticky and viscous it looks like as it's pouring out there.
Yeah, and you can actually use it in baking as well as an egg substitute. Traditional egg substitute, the powdery stuff, is, I think, a little more processed than I would like. So I've also started working with that, and it works really well in vegan baking. We are also going to add 4 chipotle chilies to this food processor as well. 3/4 cup of breadcrumbs. You can certainly just buy panko. We produce so much excess bread by being a sandwich-oriented restaurant. We make as many croutons as we possibly can, but we still have extra bread, so we're always figuring out what we can do with it. So this is Scholar's Inn multi-grain bread that I've processed in the food processor until it became crumbs. So it will work well, and it happens to also be a vegan bread, so we can stay on the vegan train. And then last but not least, we want 4 teaspoons of red wine vinegar. just going to let this go. We may need to periodically scrape down the sides. All right, we're not looking for totally smooth. So if we are likening this to peanut butter, because it does kind of look like that, you basically want chunky peanut butter. So getting a little bit of that bean texture when you're eating it just reminds you of what went in it, which I think is very pleasant. I think the seasoning is just about right. We get a nice level of salty savoriness. There's definitely some heat in the very back of your throat from the chipotles. As I said, you could either stop here and put it away and cook it off when you're ready for dinner, or in our case, we're going to go ahead and bake them off into little patties.
It's into a 375-degree oven for 5 minutes, quick, so they don't dry out. Arlen puts the finishing touches on this after another story from Harvest. When a big company leaves a city, it can leave an economic scar. Now, imagine that company employs nearly one-third of the town. That's the situation in Sydney, Nebraska, corporate home of the outdoor sports retailer Cabela's. As Grant Gerlach reports, residents are wondering what will be left of their hometown company after it merges with a competitor.
When you get off of Interstate 80 here at Sydney, Cabela's makes a big impression because at the store, they've got this giant bull elk sculpture out front. There's a Cabela's water tower, and next to that, the sprawling Cabela's headquarters. I mean, this multi-billion dollar company just pops up out of the range. That's Cabela's, the company with those huge stores that sell hunting and fishing gear. Cabela's has been based in Sydney for nearly 50 years, but now it will become part of another hunting fishing outfitter, Bass Pro Shops, in a $5.5 billion merger. Cabela's currently employs 2,000 people in Sydney. That leaves this town of 6,800 in western Nebraska wondering how many will stick around.
We're all worried. You'd be a little naive not to be.
Joey Gorman is co-owner of Dude's Steakhouse, named for his grandfather who started the place. Drive west from downtown, and you'll see the cutout of a cow on the roof, a reminder that this is ranch country. Dude's has been around since 1952. Cabela's $4 billion in revenue last year helps keep it going.
Cabela's has the biggest influence on our business. They always have, and we're proud to serve Cabela's, the family, and the workers, and all the way from the top six all the way down to the warehouse workers.
Gorman is waiting to hear what's next. Bass Pro says it wants to continue the Cabela's brand and keep workers in Sydney. How many workers, they won't say.
We just hope everybody can hold on until we get a good answer and everybody can breathe a little, that the buildings are filled up, and the next company would like to stay around and hopefully give us a chance too.
Other towns have faced similar economic turbulence. Maytag, the appliance maker, left Newton, Iowa in 2007. HP stopped building computers in Greeley, Colorado in 2000. They adapted. Newton makes wind turbines now. The HP site is a new retail center. This is a crossroads for Sydney and for Lori Rowan-Peets, co-owner of The Coffee Corner. She got into business when she was laid off from Cabela's, ending a 24-year career that started in high school.
I was let go from Cabela's in January, and I decided my career there was probably over, and I might as well try something new.
Now she owns the kind of small business that will rise or fall on what happens next in Sydney. Lately, Pete says there seem to be fewer customers downtown.
You know, they're all scared to let go of their money at all, so things have slowed down.
Sydney has come through this kind of crossroads before. Outgoing Mayor Mark Nienheiser says when an Army ammunition depot closed in 1967, around 2,000 jobs went with it.
And they survived that. We're going to survive this.
The town never has matched its peak population of 8,000 in 1960, but has rebuilt while many rural towns struggle. Now the city needs to keep employment up to make new investments pay off. There's a new hospital, a new high school, and a new housing development that so far is only streets and sidewalks.
I think we're very confident that Bass Pro is going to do what they said they're going to do, and there's going to be a very significant number of jobs still here in Sydney. But we're going to look to finding new businesses to recruit to town so we can continue to grow in that way.
Businesses like Bell Lumber and Pole, which makes utility poles. It opened last year. 40 acres of logs, fir, cedar, and pine, stacked up like Lincoln logs. They'll be weatherized here and shipped across the country. Mark Odell is the plant manager.
We currently have 41 employees. Most of them do live out of Sydney. The farthest our employees drive would be from Kimball, 16 some miles, you know, to the west.
Bell Lumber is not like Cabela's. It's small, it's blue collar, but it shows Sydney has assets, starting with its location. It's on the Union Pacific and Burlington Northern Railroads, and right on Interstate 80 and US 385, which runs from Canada to Mexico. With or without Cabela's, at least that gives Sydney a path forward. Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
For the next few months, Harvest Public Media is going to explore the rural-urban divide and how these differences define our future. You can keep an eye on their reporting at harvestpublicmedia.org. Okay, ready to assemble our veggie burger. Arlen Llewellyn makes a couple optional non-vegan choices.
So we're gonna use some marble rye. This bread is not actually vegan, so it won't be used if this was the vegan version of this sandwich with the avocado, but since we're gonna put the cheese on this, we'll go ahead and use the marble rye because I just really like the flavor. So we are spreading the roasted garlic aioli on both sides of the rye bread. We're gonna go ahead and put this veggie burger on the slice of bread, one of the slices of bread that has that roasted garlic aioli on it. We're gonna top it with a little bit of that Good Life arugula and some pickled jalapenos. We just make them in-house with just vinegar and sea salt. So they are, and they're never cooked, they're refrigerator pickles, so they're very spicy. I definitely recommend making your own pickled jalapenos because not only is it super easy, you're not dealing with a complicated brine, as I said, just vinegar and salt. I think you end up with a superior product because it doesn't get cooked, so it doesn't get mushy.
I see you, jalapeno seeds. This is gonna be hot.
A little spicy, yep. But you know, that's how we roll around here. So pickled jalapenos, and then we're topping this with pepper jack and our other piece of rye bread that has that roasted garlic aioli. I'm gonna pop this on a panini press. You could certainly do this in a saute pan on your stove. The veggie burger, because it was already hot, or at least warm, isn't cold in the center, so we're not gonna need to cook it for too long. We're just looking for that cheese to start melting. So I'd say this is done, and this should be a burger you can really feel good about eating.
Let it rest on a cooling rack before you put it on a plate, because no one likes soggy bread on a sandwich. A big thanks to Chef Arlen Llewellyn. Follow her recipes and see photos at eartheats.org. Thanks also to the guy who takes such beautiful pictures, Ayabon Binder. Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killo write for our blog. Chef Daniel Orr also contributes recipes. And Earth Eats executive producer is John Bailey. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail, more information at personalfinancialservices.net. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Urgent Foods, a locally owned food truck offering gourmet choices for all lifestyles, tastes, and diets. From gluten-free to kosher and halal. Food for everyone, everywhere. Full menu and truck location available at urgentfoods.com. I'm Annie Corrigan. Thanks for listening.